Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. And let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Who would dare interrupt me during my midday fast?
Yeah.
Oh, the Spiegel and Holmes show.
Danny Parkins.
We've got Craig Council joining us.
What do you think of Breakfast Ball? 8 a.m. Eastern time on Fox Sports with our boy Danny Parkins. Yeah, any review?
You know, Danny was great on the radio.
Co-host of Breakfast Ball on Fox Sports 1.
And we're talking to Adam Silver, commissioner of the NBA.
A couple crazy ideas. Would we ever make dunks worth 3 points?
You could laugh at that if you want.
Yeah, you know, in all seriousness, I mean, I never want to say never about anything. I don't think that makes sense to me.
Okay. Another thing they would do, I'm the math guy on the show, make threes worth four and make twos worth three. We change the math. And then all of a sudden you're shooting less threes.
Yeah, and I mean this seriously. I think for the NBA, it's not that we're necessarily stuck in tradition. You know, I'm not against doing new things if we have a reason to believe that we're fixing, that they will fix the problem. I'm not sure those suggestions solve that, and I think they seem radical.
They are.
He abandoned us.
Throwing is a very specific thing. You either learned to do it and did it a whole bunch, or you didn't, and you pitched like Danny.
Yeah. Wow, I was not expecting a sideswipe at Danny.
That came out.
Danny Parkins with Spiegel and Holmes.
That is the story of the game. So I'm with my Slim Reaper friend over here.
On 670 The Score.
I like that as a nickname for Danny Parkins. Slim Reaper.
That's good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, I know there have been other people who have had it too. Like Kevin Durant has had that. But he's getting ready to retire. And Danny's coming into his prime. So I think the name should probably transfer to him. He joins us now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. This has been the Breakfast Ball, like, post-game edition here. Schlereth was on middays, and now Danny is here with us on afternoons. You guys had the commissioner of the NBA on. Things seem to be going well, sir.
Things are going well. Lawrence, Grody, good to see you. I did not know that Stink was on with Lawrence and with Layla and Marshall. That's awesome. I have to be totally candid with you guys. Can I be candid for a second?
Yeah, feel free.
Go ahead, Stink.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, you know, if in that open that Tanny does, you know, one of the times that you guys had me on, we interrupted a midday bath. I woke up from my midday nap about 11 minutes ago. In the time that I was asleep, because I was off Twitter for about 90 minutes before I laid down for my nap, Aaron Rodgers became a Steeler, the White Sox got sold, and Elon and Trump had a breakup. Like, what the hell happened in the world? And I feel like I went to sleep and I woke up and the whole world was different. Like, unbelievable.
It's true, so, yeah. Danny, that you miss a lot.
My God.
Every now and again, like, you take a little bit of time and then things are different. What's your... I don't know if you've read the open statement from the White Sox. And
I did.
While it seems like it's cool, it also seems like Jerry's like he's gonna have control, but not for a while of this thing.
Yes. Okay. I understand the idea of like you're gonna get your new bicycle Christmas 2034. Like I understand that is like a cruel and unusual joke to play on your kid. It'd be like if I told Owen, who graduated from pre-K today, like, we're gonna get you the Nintendo Switch with the Sonic game when you turn 9. Like, it would be very cruel to do to a child. But I feel like White Sox fans, like, you can't have it both ways, because the news could have been, nah, we changed our minds and we're going to just keep the team within the family forever.
Uh-huh.
So like this is a light at the end of the tunnel situation. Would it be better if it was just done and, you know, by the All-Star game, the Ishbias were in complete control? Of course, like that would be better, but don't look the gift horse in the mouth. Like, you're still going to get the Sonic video game Christmas of 2034 at the latest. So is it perfect? No, but it's still pretty damn good.
It's a long time, and Owen will be driving when all goes on. It's this sentence, Danny, that has got me uncomfortable, where they're explaining the timeline, and then there is no assurance that any such future transaction will occur. And in no event will such a transaction take place before 2029.
No way, shape,
or form. Yeah, they're pacing themselves, Lawrence. Yeah. They're pacing themselves. You know what this is? This is in 5 years, Jay Leno's going to give the Tonight Show.
Yes! That's a great pull, Danny.
That's so good.
And don't worry, nothing's going to go wrong. What's going to happen is, like, Ishbia is going to get control of the White Sox in 2039. And then in 2031, Jerry Reinsdorf's going to be like, actually, oh, I want to run the White Sox for the first 4 innings. Is that a problem? Like,
oh, man. Oh, Lord. Yeah, I got to say, like, when I heard the news breaking, I happened to hear it on The Score. I heard Layla and Marshall talking about it, and they were reading it.
Great place to hear it, yeah.
But yeah, great place to hear it. They were very serious about it. My first reaction was, yes, it's actually happening. We're getting somewhere. I know that this has been out there in the DNA. We've all talked about it. There's been stories and reports and all of that. But this is the first time where, okay, we're getting somewhere. It's in writing. So I think maybe I am one of those people who is accepting being pacified by Jerry Reinsdorf because he is showing us an end game in something where a lot of us never thought that there would be an endgame. And to the point you just made, Danny, maybe there won't be an endgame. Maybe something ridiculous will still occur. So I feel like there might be a lot of people who are okay with this, even though it's as convoluted and far off as it actually is.
Yeah, maybe the White Sox will end up playing all their games on TBS like Conan. Like, who knows? Like, this is going to be a weird thing. It's not conventional. It's not easy. It's not linear. But would it be the White Sox if it was easy?
Like, correct.
Would it be the White Sox if it was just like a good, clean break and you're like, oh, and tomorrow you have your version of Steve Cohen. Congratulations. Like, no, it's not supposed to be easy. You're the White Sox. You don't want it to be good, clean, and easy. So, and here's the thing. Like, What the old Obama line, right? Like, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. This is good news. It's good news.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not perfect news.
Uh-huh.
You don't know that the next guy is going to be better.
That's, you know, Danny, I'm glad that you said that. I'm glad that you said that, because there have been people that have been in the text line or in folks in the mob, and they're like, well, anyone but Reinsdorf. And I'm like, careful, Balky, because you would have said the same thing about Garpax, and then you ended up getting Garpax again.
Yeah.
Right. I hear you, like, right. But don't confuse what I'm saying. Like, I don't think that it's going to be worse.
I mean,
I just don't know that it's going to be better.
We'll see.
Right? It might not be better. It's hard to imagine it being worse. So I think that in that scenario, you're in pretty good shape. It is a day to celebrate if you're a White Sox fan, even if when you have to explain to your friends and family why you're celebrating, it's like the iTunes user agreement. Like there's like a little bit of fine print. You got it. Like it's a little complicated. You don't really know exactly what you're clicking accept on, but you know that the new iPhone is dope. Like that's really what you're doing here. Like, but don't make it. It's good news. Yeah. We just don't know when it's good news and how good news it is yet.
Not perfect. I think you put it well. It's not perfect news.
So Danny, yeah, Aaron Rodgers is a Steeler. How you feeling about that?
Yeah, Danny.
I mean, I said that literally like week 16 of last season that the Steelers were the team that makes sense. We had Breakfast Ball did like a whole mock-up of him in a Steelers jersey, and it was funny because the one that they did, they like superimposed him on Justin Fields, and so he had an arm sleeve, which I thought was hilarious. This is the thing that has made sense because what I have had an issue with Aaron Rodgers for the last 3 years is that he has gotten so much airtime, so many takes, so many column inches without ever playing in a meaningful football game.
Right.
Right? Because he's deserving of the attention and the drama and the sideshow based on his football career. The only guy ever with more MVPs is Peyton Manning. He's one of the most talented guys in the history of the sport. He's now just an old diva conspiracy theorist who has been like red-pilled and his algorithms messed up his brain like tens and tens of millions of people. But the guy can still sling it. Like the end of his season last year with the Jets, the eye test, he passed it. He looked pretty good. So now he goes to Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh can have Mitch Trubisky. They can have Duck Hodges. They can have Mason Rudolph. They can have anybody. And it's like their floor is 9 wins. So they're going to play interesting, meaningful football games. Like Aaron Rodgers is going to play Lamar Jackson. He's going to play Joe Burrow. He's going to play the Bears. He's going to play the Packers. Like that at least on shows like mine, that it almost feels like it's contractually obligated to talk about Aaron Rodgers. Well, we also talk about the Steelers because they're nationally relevant and play huge games in an interesting division and are on national TV all the time. So while I don't think he's going to win a playoff game for them or win a Super Bowl for them, I do at least think that he will now play in meaningful football games and be interesting and therefore worthy of the discussion and the sideshow that comes along with Aaron Rodgers.
You know, I was saying this to Lawrence earlier too, Danny. It just feels like it. I know it's Aaron Rodgers and you laid out the point well that he played better, like passed the eye test at the end of last season. It just feels desperate from the standpoint of Pittsburgh. Like,
oh, it
this is?
Is
them conceding that they have not been able to figure out quarterback since Ben Roethlisberger, obviously.
Yeah, it is desperate. But like their options were Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, and what else? Right? Like this year's quarterback class was not considered last year's quarterback class, where you had 6 quarterbacks go in the top 12.
Or right? Next year's quarterback class.
Right. Or next year's quarterback class. So what was their option this offseason?
What was the plausibility of like Kirk Cousins? Did that come up as a discussion?
It had been talked about over the last like 2 weeks that maybe they might trade for Kirk Cousins.
Like that would feel better for some reason. Like I could get on board with that.
Yeah, and he has, you know, familiarity in that system, you know, but more people think he would make sense for the Browns because of Stefanski, but they've decided to go with whatever the hell Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, Dylan Gabriel, and Shedeur Sanders is.
Does anybody, by the way, think it's not going to be Shedeur Sanders by the end of the year because everybody's just going to want to see what it looks like?
If it isn't, there's a problem.
Well, I mean, hold on, though. Not to talk too much Browns quarterbacking, but they drafted Dylan Gabriel 2 rounds before Shedeur Sanders.
They're gonna cut Dylan Gabriel.
It's not like this is some sort of mandate by the Cleveland Browns that they believe in Shedeur Sanders.
No, but
that fifth round pick fine, it seemed to be like, okay, fine.
Like, but everybody's going to want Shadur. Like I'm talking about like the public pressure in sports talk radio. Everybody's going to just want to see, even if it sucks and it shouldn't be seen, everybody's going to want to see it. And that stuff gets into organizations' heads.
It certainly could. And like Kirk Cousins v. Aaron Rodgers for the Steelers, I suppose, is a legitimate debate. But Aaron Rodgers just cost them money. Kirk Cousins is much more expensive. You'd have to trade something for him. Like what Atlanta did last year at quarterback, we don't have a great comp for in NFL history. They gave the guy $180 million and then used the 9th overall pick on a quarterback. Like, it was crazy what the Falcons did last year. And so I don't know what Atlanta is doing, but as of now, they want to go with both Penix and Cousins. So I think for Pittsburgh, like, again, it's a deal with the devil, but it's a deal with the devil for a year, as opposed to giving up real assets to make a commitment to a mediocre quarterback for a long time.
Can I pitch a segment for tomorrow's breakfast ball?
Please.
Should Aaron Rodgers request to wear number 12?
Ooh, I like it. The Abdul Carter, where he requests 56, and he's like, "Why can't I wear 56 for the Giants? What's the problem?"
And I looked it up. 12 is not retired. Okay. It just hasn't been given out. It's like 54 with the Bears, because the Steelers have a lot of retired numbers too, and we do know that Terry Bradshaw has been taking quite a few shots at Aaron Rodgers. I just wonder if this is a way for Aaron Rodgers to go, "I see your shot, and I offer you this shot. I'd like to wear number 12.
Yeah, the Steelers won't do that to Terry, and I'm glad you mentioned the history of Terry taking shots at Rodgers, because a pretty big one happened on this time slot on this radio station with Dave Wannstedt, where he called him dumber than a box of rocks.
That was here.
Chew bark.
Which is incredible, because I don't know. I'm sure Tanny remembers, because he remembers everything. We gave Bradshaw like the opportunity to like circle back on it, and he's like, "What did I call him? Dumber than a box of rocks? Okay, yeah, I guess I did say that." And he just doubled down. My guess is he goes with 8, right? My guess is he goes with his college number.
That would make sense. I just think that he is so petty that even if he knows that he's going to end up with 8, that he might want to do it just for the spectacle of it.
Yeah, it's a good thought, and it would be a hilarious first moment.
Yep.
Like, I'm going to make you wait. For whatever, we're June 3rd or whatever it is. So we are 5 months post Super Bowl. And then the first thing I do as a member of the Steelers is create a distraction with the best quarterback in your franchise history.
It's coming, man. It's coming.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. That would be.
Well, he's just dumb in a box of rocks, isn't he?
There it is.
That was so good. That was so enjoyable.
Nice job, baby T.
Yeah, baby T.
Baby T.
That's a good job by you getting that done.
That was hilarious. I'm taking us backstage. I'm just doing it because of baby T. Automatically, when he hears that, of course, like a good producer, he's looking all over for it. And unfortunately, Chris Tannehill had to leave, so he just like has been put right in the seat. And Lawrence is like, "Don't worry, baby T. It's okay. It's okay, baby T."
I didn't know. I'm sorry to call for audio.
Oh no, it's okay.
No, it was a really good test for baby T.
He crushed it.
And he crushed it.
He just crushed it. Nobody knows.
Should we listen to Cora get fired as Red Sox manager?
All right, now you're pushing it.
You can find that. No, I think Julio destroyed it again.
I think you're right about that. As a station, we're really excited that the Cubs for Cure Radiothon is back. July 31st, Danny Parkins will return. That email was sent out today. I don't know if you got it. I don't know if Mitch remembered to put you on the email, Danny, but the whole station group got the email today, and we're super excited that you get an opportunity to share and help other people heal and raise a lot of money for a great cause.
Yeah, thank you. And yes, Mitch is BCCing me on some of the staff emails. I'm seeing the misspellings. I'm seeing the typos. I'm seeing the run-on sentences.
Ah, it feels so good, doesn't it?
Yeah, I want to know what his world record is for words in a subject line of an email, because it's absolutely incredible what he's capable of. You know, it's very exciting that the Cubs sent out the press release and announced it today. It's the true professional honor that the Score, Fox, the Cubs have allowed me to kind of still spearhead this thing for as long as the Radiothon is going to continue into the future. And some real exciting things, like, you know, you call up Hochberg, the suite is available. You call up Russ Armstrong, the Chicago window guy, he's in for a sponsorship. Our good friends at Rinaldi's and Benchmark, Four Corners, the tremendous hospitality group in Chicago. Benchmark actually just hosted a Brain Up Young Professionals event. Brain Up, of course, the organization that I'm on the board of directors of, that's a beneficiary of a lot of the Radiothon funding, near and dear to my heart, for brain cancer research in honor of my brother Brad. The Danny Parkin special, I know we sent some of those to you guys today, ahead of your birthday. By the way, Lawrence, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Big milestone birthday, by the way.
Yes, it is.
39. Congrats, man.
Again, for the 11th
39
year.
39 again.
Yes.
It's very impressive. But no, but Rinaldi's is back on board for a $10,000 sponsorship for a full hour. Could not ask for a better partner there. And, you know, the hour-for-hour sponsors are coming together. The patients' testimonials are coming together. The doctors' testimonials. We're going to have something really cool this year that I can't give all the details out on, but at least one, maybe two patients with glioblastoma, so with terminal brain cancer, not only will be in studio telling their stories, but they also will be sponsoring hours of the Radiothon.
Wow.
Which is going to be just a very cool, powerful thing that they're going to kind of be dedicating some of their money and funds to research in their own name while they are still, you know, fighting the good fight. So that's never been done before, to my knowledge, in one of these things. So I'm really looking forward to that. There are going to be patients who were on last year's Radiothon that will be back. Unfortunately, a few people have passed away since last year, so we will be honoring them. It is going to be a very, very – Eddie Olchek just confirmed with me in the last 24 hours that he's in to host a full hour in studio. He's going to be in town this year, so Eddie O will be telling his story in person. So many more things to go, working on this literally every day in the lead-up to the Radiothon. And it's just, you know, it's the honor of a lifetime to be able to do this in honor of my brother Brad and everybody facing cancer. And what I would still say, I remember the first Radiothon for Austin Harvest, my friend David Hochberg came in and he was like, what about banks? In terms of like, why aren't more banks on board? We got a title sponsorship still available because I'm not selling it for cheap. Maybe it won't happen until next year's Radiothon, but there's got to be a company out there who wants to be philanthropic forward and put their name on this thing and write a big check that's tax deductible. Think about, you know, Ryan Sandberg last year announcing that he was cancer free and what that moment was. There are going to be moments like that again on this Radiothon. It's an amazing cause. You get to be in partnership with the Score, with the Chicago Cubs, 100%, because another thing, and I'm rambling, I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
And I'm very proud of this. There is no overhead. So all these, like you know, I'm on the board of directors at Brain Up. We have our 5K September 21st. Last year we raised about $600,000, but there's overhead. There's permits and security and t-shirts and the financial hosting of a website. Like, there's cost associated with it. You MC a gala, you got to rent the ballroom and give people an open bar and steak, and there's cost. I can honestly say we raised $554,000 last year during the Radiothon. $554,000 went to research. 100% of money raised during the Radiothon goes to cancer research. So get at me on Instagram, email, Twitter, call the Score, email me. They will put you in contact. Let's figure out a way to raise a ton of money this year for cancer research. July 31st to August 1st, the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon is back.
And you work with a guy named Stink. If that doesn't get him, then I don't know what will.
I don't know what will.
Yeah.
I don't know what will.
Oh, and on that note, putting together, don't have the details yet, so I can only give like 30%. Maybe I should have saved this. But putting together something for mob members might only be for four people, but we're going to have something at the Radiothon where we're going to organize the ability for mob members to have a trip to New York.
What?
And they can come see the show.
Ooh.
Meet Stank.
Wow.
Meet Carton. maybe going to do it around a Cubs game, maybe do it around a Yankees game.
Okay, okay.
But like fancy New York dinner, New York baseball game, airfare. Like I don't have all of the details on it yet, but it's going to be a very exclusive thing for some of the most diehard mob members of the old Parkinson Spiegel show to come to New York, see Breakfast Ball. We're going to fly you out there, and then I'm going to treat you to, you know, 24 to 48 hours in New York. So I got 30% of that done, but we're working on it every day. It's going to be an amazing event.
Will Jeff Agress be documenting the situation too? Will he be there as well?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. Okay.
Agress bumping me from the rankings because
I
took the TV job. It was a little upsetting.
You're out, pal. Upsetting. You're out. Maybe the Radiothon will get you back.
You know, you're out to bigger and better things, and that's a good thing that you continue to still show some of that power for a power ranking here in Chicago.
Don't they have a list there? Are you on the list in New York yet or not? What's going on?
No, that's the thing.
Oh.
That's the thing. I'm vain, Grody. Now I'm at the bottom. Now I'm not even on list.
Oh, you're not on a list yet. Okay.
Now all the lists have Cowherd and Nick on it and not me.
Oh, okay.
But those are your guys, though, so you got to be happy for them.
I am happy for that. Oh, and by the way, I can also say Cowherd and Nick will be involved in the Radiothon in some way, too.
Nice.
So We're calling in the big guns. This year.
I like it. Danny, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Talk to you in a couple weeks.
Talk to you whenever you guys want. Thank you.
Bye, Danny.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
I just actually relate to the White Sox. You know, my dad pitched for them from 83 through 87. I think back to my childhood, and it was Chicago. It was catching lightning bugs, going to Comiskey, and it had the yellow paint on all the railings, and I used to sit there as a kid and pick the paint, and I probably ate too much of it. It was the organ. It was the mascot.
Dwight Bannister. Bannister, of course, since the All-Star break, is 4-0. So that left-hander starting to come alive. Here's the 3-2 pitch. struck him out, and he got it in a good spot.
And now Vernon Wells not happy with the strike zone, but Brian Bannister is thrilled. Bannister has retired 13 of the last 14.
I think he brings a lot to the table. I think he's got a lot to offer as far as pitch design.
I talked with a lot of different people who extol his virtues and say that, you know, he's one of the best guys around, and I think there's great reviews on Brian.
He's been awesome. He pretty much has revolutionized some of the pitchers in our game, especially the guys that sink the ball, the seam shift. I joke, I call him the seam shift god.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
That was Eric Fetty who called him that. We like to call him the director of pitching for the White Sox, and he's nice enough to join us here on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Brian, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. You have in front of you two people who are huge fans of what's gone on with Shane Smith this season. How have you guys gotten him to this place that he's in right now?
Good to be here. You know, Shane is an extremely talented pitcher. It's a great story being undrafted, going through some injury stuff. We just really liked how his fastball performed at AA and AAA last year for the Brewers. And, you know, there were some other interesting ingredients there where he added the changeup, kind of refined it with the seam shift stuff. And he's gone out there and pitched like an all-star, in my opinion. And it's been fun to watch him way outperform compared to your typical Rule 5 pick. But he's a classy guy. He's worked hard. He's come in prepared. And just exciting to watch him every time out, especially what he just did against the Tigers.
Was on my list. What did you identify in Shane Smith? You said how the fastball was performed and then a couple different ingredients. That's a little vague. Come on, what was it? What'd you see? Everybody's wondering what you saw, Bannister and Shane Smith.
You know, it was a group effort. I'll give credit to the whole R&D group, which keeps getting better every day, the stuff we've been doing behind the scenes. But what's interesting is his fastball doesn't ride. You talk about vertical movement or you talk about hop or ride. His fastball doesn't do that. It actually has randomness to it. Sometimes it cuts. Sometimes it backs up. He hides the ball really well. He gets really big extension, similar to a Grant Taylor. So there's just a lot of unique ingredients with his fastball that I think gives hitters fits. And then he can also spin it really well. And he's added that late nasty changeup. And it's become a complete package. And he's electric every time out.
Brian, when it comes to discussing things with pitchers, what's the process for you to figure out how much information you can give them in whatever form it is? Like, some guys clearly want to talk about what happens statistically. Some guys want to talk feel. Some people want to talk finger pressure. Like, how do you go about figuring out what type of learner you have inside of the pitching infrastructure?
I think we try to identify what their strengths are, because there's a lot of ways to get hitters out, but too much information can almost work against the pitcher. And so we try to bucket it down to, here's what you are, here's what we think you can do really, really well. And we try to give them a lot of information vertically, like in a very narrow space. If you sink the ball, we're going to teach you a lot about sinkers. If you spin the ball really well, we're going to teach you a lot about breaking balls. But we're not going to say everything about everything, because that can just be information overload. And we don't want them thinking too much out there, but we want them being really good at what they do well.
Was there ever a point in your career where that was something that, because you clearly are a pitching geek, and I say that with love, but was there ever a point when you were pitching where you're like, man, I'm not getting what I need how I need it?
A lot of my career, because when I pitched my first full season with the Royals in 2007, that was the year that PitchFX Sport Vision first came out, and that was the first year we had information on pitching. And I made a lot of mistakes, along with my teammate Zach Greinke, trying to figure some of this stuff out, because there was no handbook on how to use it all. So a lot of my career was actually me stumbling upon good things and also making mistakes on how to use this information. But through that process, I was able to extract a lot of good principles and pass it along to these pitchers who I joke are way better than I was, and save them the trouble and the hassle of making the same mistakes that I did. and just make their career more streamlined and easier and get them to their ceiling performance-wise as fast as possible.
Oh, man, Zach Greinke. Now, there's a smart guy and a curious guy, and that's what I've heard, you know, asking somebody who knows you, Brian, like, well, hey, what do you love about Brian Bannister? The person said his curiosity, he's curious about everything. I love that because the whole pitching universe is insane. Like, people don't know how to keep arms healthy, and it's the most expensive and most valuable thing in the sport, and yet we can't do it. So you must have a passion and a curiosity for what you do. It's not like you know everything. You're still trying to learn everything, aren't you?
Yeah, and we use, you know, we steal it from the software world. We iterate through things. We don't claim to know it all, but we'll take a pitcher and we'll try something for a couple of pitches. And we'll see if it's better than what he was doing before. If it's worse, we move on right away. If it's better, we stick with it and keep experimenting with it. But we've had so many pitchers now. There's so much data out there. There's hundreds of millions of pitches that have been captured over the last two decades. So we can really leverage that information and help guys make better decisions faster. But at the same time, we want those happy, fortunate accidents to happen. Similar to a Shane Smith changeup, where all of a sudden it just takes off and it becomes one of the better pitches in the sport. We always want those fun accidents to happen because we don't want to just bottleneck these guys with what we've done in the past. We always want to let them offer up something new because their anatomy, their pitching style, the way their hand grips the ball, sometimes there's always unique combinations. And we want to allow that to happen organically.
Brian Bannister is the director of pitching for the Chicago White Sox, and he's on the Spiegel and Holmes show here on The Score. We did some reporting about the R&D department that you referenced earlier in the interview as a highly expanded, you know, analytics realm, now rebranded R&D. Can you tell us about how that department is helping and if it's integrated into pitching and hitting and minors and majors? Tell us how that's working, because that can be a difficult thing to ramp up inside an organization.
Yes, and just being with my two previous organizations, I had the opportunity to kind of do an A-B test. So here's what I had before, here's where we're at, and kind of just use those experiences to share with the very talented analysts that we had, Chris Getz, Josh Barfield. So kind of the advantage of coming in from another organization or having been in multiple places is you can just share, this is what we had, or this is what we were working on, and able to upgrade workflows and processes. But really, when you came in, we were behind just objectively. We had the talent. It wasn't organized very well, and we have completely done a 180 in that department. And the biggest areas that as an organization we've gotten better at is both our R&D department and what we're doing in Latin America. And so being able to take these talented analysts, organize the data right, clean up the data, build good reports for the coaches, build good systems that make our decisions happen quicker, and then take somebody like myself or Ryan Fuller on the hitting side, my counterpart on the hitting side, and be able to just have great discussions with the coaches, the minor league players, and just kind of build organization-wide systems and processes that make us better and help us make decisions faster that are more accurate.
Are you confident that when a Noah Schultz or a Hagen Smith hits the big leagues, they'll be coached the same way with the same kind of information, delivered the same style that you learned that they best succeed with? Are you comfortable that consistency will be there?
That's actually the primary goal of what I try to build on the pitching culture side, is I want to empower all the coaches. I want us to use our own internal lingo, our own terminology on what we believe and be confident in that, to collaborate and talk about all those concepts every single day. And whether you have Matt Zaleski, our pitching coordinator, or Kurt Hassler, who's been our bullpen coach at the major league level, Ethan Katz, who I worked alongside with in San Francisco at the major league level, it doesn't matter who is interfacing with one of the pitchers. We're speaking the same language. We're using accurate data, objective data, but really we're just tailoring it to what they do, how they need to move. And we've grown by leaps and bounds in the last 2 years. And it's one of the things I'm most excited about. We have you know, one of, if not the cheapest and youngest pitching staffs in Major League Baseball. But these guys keep coming up and contributing. There's upside surprises. That's always one of my metrics for are you operating well as a player development department, is do players surprise to the upside? You have industry consensus evaluations, and do players consistently outperform those expectations? That's when you know you're doing it right, when the players are getting the most out of their ability or even stumbling upon something new that takes them to another level. And that's what's fun, and I think that's when people are enjoying their jobs and looking forward to coming to the ballpark every day because they know they might get better, but they know they're always going to have open, transparent communication. And that's when you start winning ball games and things start trending to the upside.
What's your approach when it comes to whether or not a pitcher needs to just drill down on the things that they do really well versus experimenting? Like maybe it's a guy with two pitches and you're saying, you know, they could use a changeup or a slider, and here's how we can form that pitch up for them. How do you decide on this is what this guy is and that's what he needs to stick to versus he could be even better if he experiments?
I spend just as much of my time helping pitchers understand their strengths or developing something new as I do taking things away and telling them not to do anything more. Just be really, really good at what you're doing right now. Practice those mechanics. Practice that repeatability and that command. Just be more confident throwing it in any count. A lot of times pitchers always want to add something new, and our goal is to give them an arsenal that will compete and be functional at the major league level. But then beyond that, we just want them to repeat and be as consistent as possible. There is a point where you just keep tinkering too much. And so we spend just as much of our time taking things away from pitchers or telling them, don't keep tinkering. Don't keep trying something new. Just be happy with where you're at and just be better at that. And so it's a balance between the two sides.
Brian, there's an opportunity when the runway's kind of long, when you're a few years away as an organization and the big bus needs to take a big turn, you know? And I'm wondering if you take advantage of that. The pause for Colson Montgomery on the hitting side to go to swing school in Arizona and then go back, and that has had some good effects. And then I saw the pause for biomechanical work for, who was it, Iriarte and Hagen Smith? Is that right? I think it was those two. It was that seemed like a novel concept. Do you guys take advantage? Are you taking advantage of the long runway with some creativity? It's what it seems like.
Yes, we do have new resources. You know, Chris and Jerry have given us really helpful tech. But the big thing is we just want these pitchers to pitch in the style that's best for them. One of the nice things, and I just spent the week with Hagen, you know, we had access to a new lab. He had a great coach in Matt Hobbs at University of Arkansas. They were capturing a lot of data on him when he was at his best, being the national pitcher of the year in college. And so we were able to go back and compare some of the things he was doing with Matt Hobbs and get him back to his best. You know, he has no problem striking people out, but the way he was using his legs, the walk rate was a little higher, and we just identified some things. And we're able to jump in there, compare the data from 2 years ago to now, and clean some stuff up and even make some improvements on top of that. And it was a great week with Hagen. Same with Iriarte. He was getting a little long with his arm stroke, leading some walks. His pitch shapes were off a little bit. We're able to tighten up his arm stroke, get him back to what he was in 2023 with the Padres, the stuff he liked to do then, and the stuff that we saw on the scouting side that we were impressed by. And so, you know, just because the minor league season, kind of that archetype was set up many, many decades ago, doesn't mean that's actually the best way to develop players. If we have the opportunity to use some of our new resources to make these guys better or to identify upgrades or changes quicker, we're going to be a little more proactive. And the agents have been great. The players are on board. It's like, let's get you back to your best so that you can go out and compete at the best version of you. Instead of just kind of doing the every 5 day routine, but struggling a little bit or feeling like something's off, let's just leverage all our resources and get you back out there and get you in the big league sooner rather than later.
White Sox director of pitching Brian Bannister joining us here for a few minutes on Spiegel and Holmes. Let me go to the darker side of that. What are the guardrails that are in place for the psychology of pitchers in a long runway. There might be a lot of people that are inside the White Sox organization that are looking at it and saying, man, you know, the process, it sounds and it looks great. And I might be getting these individual results that are going on, but the team is not getting the results. And we are dealing with human beings. How do you keep the pitchers on task even when the win-loss results at the major league level haven't been there?
You know, the starting rotation has done great. We've admittedly been behind. We have a young bullpen and an experienced bullpen. You look at our run differential, the way we've pitched compared to last year, and last year, you know, we obviously bottomed out from a win-loss perspective. But the goal is to keep trending where we're pitching better, we're hitting better. There's positive developments in all these young players, and we will continue to fill out the roles, particularly in the bullpen, via internal promotions and external acquisitions. So if you look at how we've played this year, we've drastically outperformed 2024, but we haven't been able to close out as many games. We don't have an obvious closer, an obvious eighth inning guy, but we also have identified players both internally, externally, that we'd love to fill those roles as we continue to bring all these players to the surface at the major league level. So when the Hagen Smiths, when the Noah Schultz, the Grant Taylors, the Brayden Montgomerys, the Colson Montgomerys, the Bonhamers, the Teals, as all these players start to float to the surface in the next year, it's going to be really fun from a fan perspective to see these talented young players all play together. And it'll also give us, because of our, you know, preparation, the way we're making decisions now as a front office, being able to fill in the gaps with players from the outside that'll complement these young players. And so you're going to see a continued trend to the upside as they become our new core and we're able to fill in the gaps externally.
You mentioned Grant Taylor. A lot of people surprised to see him pegged for the bullpen as opposed to starting pitcher where there's more innings. What's the thought?
You know, there's a lot of thought that goes into these decisions. I've seen the obvious reactions from the fan base, social media, the media, and they're all valid. You know, the interesting thing about Grant is when you look at how he pitches and his characteristics, he's very similar to a Tyler Glasnow. He's very similar to a Clase, to a Kenley Jansen, to I don't compare people to Mariano, but he has that kind of flexibility. Mariano is in his own category. But, you know, when you look at the guys in this category, how they're most effective, the types of injuries they tend to have, how they're used the best, you know, Grant releases the ball about 7.5 feet in front of the rubber. So he's out there releasing it where Kenley, Glasnow, all those guys release it. And you've seen the guys that have pitched in a starting role with those types of features. And they tend to be very injury prone. And we've already gone through that with Grant a little bit. So in the short term, we're looking out for his health, for how we can get him to the big leagues and contributing in the best way possible, but not pigeonholing him in a relief role, but also acknowledging that when you compare his pitch metrics, what he can do as a pitcher, it compares with some of the best closers in the world. So, you know, short term, he definitely has that kind of upside. And then people, you know, want to compare him to Skeens, et cetera, that have those types of velocities. We are totally open to him continuing to pitch in a starting role. But between managing his workload, dealing with his past injury history, and giving him maximum upside and maximum ability to contribute to the Chicago White Sox and have an outstanding major league career, we made that decision in the short term. And he's electric. You know, I've seen him up close a couple times. It's one of the best arms I've ever seen. And I don't say that lightly because I've been around a lot of good arms. So it's somebody the fans are going to enjoy watching. And we're just trying to do what's best for him.
Brian, before we let you go, obviously the score has a lot of moms and dads that have young people who play baseball. Some of them are probably on their way to their field or their complex right now. For an amateur arm, what do you think are best practices and things that parents should be looking out for their athlete?
It's a great question. And I consult for a lot of families locally. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. So a lot of families reach out on the same topic. And the thing I typically say is make sure you get 6 weeks of throwing in and progressively ramp up your arm before you get off a mound. Kids love to just jump up there and try and throw hard right away. The arm takes time to build up. So make sure, you know, you get some long toss in, that you take it easy. And then the big thing nowadays, just with all the travel ball, which wasn't a thing when I was even in high school, you know, now 25 years ago, kids are playing year round, and honestly, they never give their arms a break. So if you zoom out a little bit, look at a bigger macro cycle, build in some downtime for your arm, throughout a calendar year. There's pressure to be at every tournament, every event, every showcase, to always be stepping on the accelerator 100%. But back off, play a different sport, play some soccer, play some basketball, do something else, and you'll stay healthier long term. Arm injuries are a part of the sport, especially with what it takes to be a major league pitcher nowadays and just the increasing velocity across the game. You'll never get away from the risk of an arm injury, but you can do your best to prepare your son to just be healthy. By making sure he's built up and then building in some downtime every calendar year.
Brian, I declare that the White Sox are turning a corner. What, about a week and a half ago? I'm getting some crap from some of the fans and some colleagues, to be honest. But you're a big part of the reason why. This was really, really informative and really, really great for Sox fans to hear. So thanks for doing it.
No, I appreciate it. Always glad to be here.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. And let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. It's always great to be on with you too.
Really appreciate it. And we've got so much going on. There's also breaking news this morning from the Tribune with the Chicago Fire now planning their building in the 78. We had talked about it as a possibility with the White Sox. And now the team is planning on building a private stadium, private money, for $650 million. So we got to get into the Bears, but we got to talk about the Fire as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first, can we take a moment and just say Joe Mansueto,
yep.
A guy who grew up in Indiana, who started this newsletter about the finance industry in his apartment, self-made billionaire, didn't get it from Papa Mansueto, didn't get it from starting a finance company or tech company or finance company on his own. Now a multi-billionaire, self-made here in Chicago, publicly comes out and says he's going to spend close to $700 million of his own money to build a relatively small 22,000-seat soccer-specific stadium on private dirt. There's a lot of good to that story that we shouldn't just neglect and just gloss over as we'll talk about the bigger implications. I think that's a really good part of the story, and it's a nice thing to be able to kind of lead with, if you don't mind.
There's no doubt about it, Mark. It's extraordinary, it's transformational, and it is reflective of the kind of ambition Joe Mansueto has, and he was aggressive in pursuing this. I have to ask you this, though. $650 million, 62 yep. acres. It's at the plot of land known as the 78. It's the Chicago River at Roosevelt Road. Does the fire building this facility preclude or make it impossible for the White Sox to eye a similar project and build a baseball stadium on the same patch of land?
Well, not the same patch of land, but somewhere else on the larger patch of land. It doesn't make it impossible, but makes it far more difficult. A lot more challenges. And that is the only negative to this story, is that a soccer stadium, 22,000 seat soccer stadium, as wonderful as the and feel good as the story is, doesn't have anywhere near the economic impact that a baseball stadium would have had on that site. Doesn't have anywhere near the kind of multi-month, most of the year impact on the creation of a neighborhood and people being in the area that a baseball stadium would. And we can see that with Wrigley Field and Wrigleyville. So we don't have to go far to see what kind of impact a baseball stadium has on its surrounding community 12 months of the year, not just during the 6 or 7 months of baseball. So that may be the only drawback. But, sometimes you take the deal that you can get rather than the bigger deal that is not available. You take the deal that's available, not the deal that you'd like to have but isn't available. The White Sox deal right now is not available. Springfield is not stepping up for a lot of reasons, and the politicians will tell you that the money's just not there. Okay, that happens in government. And so this is the third or fourth anchor tenant that Related Midwest has tried to get on that property, and this one is likely to happen, but it's not the highest and best use, as I personally see it, as it would have been if there was a White Sox stadium there as the anchor.
Yeah, I mean, it's an extraordinary turn of events. Joe Mansueto, by the way, the story in the Tribune, we read a couple of quotes from him, one of which is him saying that it's his belief that stadiums should be privately financed, and he's putting his money into it. He says, most of the value accrues to the sports team, so it's only fair that the sports team shoulders the cost of its construction. When do you hear that, Mark? I mean, we don't get that in Chicago a lot, so it was pretty spectacular to read that story.
Yeah, that is true. Although, guys, here in Chicago, the United Center was built with private money. The entire rebuild of Wrigley Field, $1 billion-plus, was all built with private money. The ones that look for public money get a tremendous amount of attention. But we've had two right here. And then look at Ryan Field in Evanston being built with private money. So it's not that it doesn't happen here. It does, and it has happened here. And now this will be another example. And you look around the country and the large markets do. And look, to be fair to the Bears in this discussion, if we're going to shift to them, they've said from the beginning that they will pay for the building of the stadium itself. It's all the other costs associated with the stadium that they were looking for public funding. And building on the lakefront, it's many billions of dollars of additional costs. Whereas building in Arlington Heights, the number is far, far smaller, and it's mainly infrastructure related. So it's a very big difference in scope. But the Bears are saying they'll still build the stadium with their own money. So we even here, we've had examples of that in Chicago.
Before we pivot to the Bears, Mark, I think I'm curious about what the White Sox do now. And among their options, do they include the Michael Reese Hospital site, Soldier Field, or anywhere else that we haven't mentioned?
Well, you know, and this is where, you know, if you hear that musical chairs little theme going on in the back of your mind, think of the teams as the people walking around the chairs and the sites as the chairs that keep getting pulled one after the other as the music stops, because that's what's happening right now. The White Sox, if you recall, back when the White Sox got the site for, you know, where Wright Park Field, what is it even called these days?
Wright Field.
Thank you. There we go. That wasn't their first site. You know, they wanted to go to Aurora. They wanted to go here. They wanted to go to, that was the site that was remaining. And that may be what ends up happening here again. It's what is remaining for the White Sox rather than what is preferable for the White Sox. And that's, frankly, guys, if they stay in Chicago. And I raise that if more today than I would have yesterday. It's as much as we all want to think that they have to stay here because of the size of the market. As television, local television revenue has dried up because of cord cutting, and the value from regional sports networks has diminished so very much, the advantages that the number three market in the country has versus, say, a place like Nashville, diminish significantly for the second team in the market. So, again, I'm not trying to, you know, just raise panic, but just identify the reality that some parties are going to need to really step up to try and figure out a solution for the White Sox long-term here in town.
Has Jerry Reinsdorf, we know what a heady businessman he's been over the years, has he been outmaneuvered here by Joe Mansueto?
No, I think what this was more than anything else was Springfield changed on him over the years. That what has happened in state government in particular, not as much in the city, but has happened in state government, and the big changes. You know, when the old guard, and look, some people did well with the old guard, you know, the Michael Madigan old guard, you know, that whole group. There were a lot of people that, you know, did well. There were people that felt the city and the state was a better place to be, a better place to do business when you had the Dailies and you had the Madigans and things, you know, got done and that kind of thing. Then there are people who say, no, that was very unfair and corrupt, and we have to get rid of that. And, you know, there are arguments to be made in both directions, but it's different. It's not the same place. It's much harder to get things done in Springfield, and that is what has changed on Jerry. So I don't think it's that he was outmaneuvered. I think just the political circumstances and the broadcasting circumstances have changed over the last 15 years in a very meaningful way.
Speaking of how difficult it can be to get things done in Springfield, that brings us to the Bears. And last week we learned that the legislative session, it finished without the Bears striking a deal. They were looking at mega development legislation, which would essentially fix property taxes over the next 20 years or a period of time that they wanted. They were unable to strike a deal. Mark, what does that mean in terms of their timetable? And did they leave Springfield discouraged?
Well, they're not going to say they're leaving Springfield discouraged, but Sure, of course, because they still don't have a deal in Springfield that they can then now focus on all the other things they have to get done to be able to start committing and digging and building and buying steel and concrete and mobilizing and building a stadium. That all having been said, they got closer than they've ever gotten. And that should be optimistic. Now, there's a real question here. The idea of being part of a mega project piece of legislation or something smaller. There's a big risk being part of a mega development legislation, and that is that all sorts of things could derail it. But there might be more goodies in it for the Bears than otherwise would have been in a standalone piece of legislation or a more modest piece of legislation that should get passed without a problem. And when I say should get passed, the kinds of things the Bears have publicly asked for should come from the state as a matter of course. They're not asking for money to build a stadium. They're asking for infrastructure. They're asking for tax certainty. These are things when a private party is looking to commit $3 to $4 or more billion on a site in the state, in Cook County, that's going to be paying taxes, that's going to be employing people. The state should work with them on it. And the city legislators should not be trying to block it because their noses are out of joint, because they're moving out of the city. They're staying in the region. They're staying in Cook County, for crying out loud. They're not even leaving Cook County. So they should participate in that. And I'll add one other thing. If the Bears wind up building a dome on their stadium, I think it's actually a very bad financial decision for the Bears and a gift of epic proportions that they're giving to the state and to the county and to the region, because the Bears will never recoup anywhere close to the sunk costs that they will have in a dome stadium. But the mega events that will come in will benefit the state and the region more than they will benefit the Bears.
You know, it's kind of fascinating because it is my understanding, Mark, and maybe this isn't correct, but you can help us through the politics of this, that the state legislature is very heavily Democratic, as is all aspects of the Illinois government. And there are a lot of people in Chicago that are hesitant about putting a vote behind the Bears for them to move to Arlington Heights, because that could impact their own jobs, their own base. That them moving to Arlington Heights might make it more difficult for the Democrats in the legislature to vote for that or to aid them in any way. Is that part of the game here?
If it is, and look, you know, this is Chicago and Illinois, so it very well could be. But if it is, it is such small ball, it is so trivial as compared to what is on the table, to be almost embarrassing if that is actually where their heads are at. I mean, truly embarrassing. It is so trivial compared to the overall benefit for the state. But it is Chicago and it is Illinois, so you can't discount that as a possibility.
Speaking of embarrassed, what's Kevin Warren's reaction, or how does he look if this does not result in a deal being struck and the ground being broken, and we get to the 2026 calendar year, January 1st, and the Bears are not having started the project in Arlington Heights?
It'll be a disappointment for sure, but you know, Kevin is eternally optimistic. That is his nature. You know, if you know Kevin's background, if you know the health issues he suffered as a young man and how he has and how he recovered from horrific injuries that he suffered, if you understand his faith, you understand that Kevin Warren is an eternally optimistic man who has great belief in the Lord and in the and in his plan for us. So he will take it as a challenge and he will continue to move forward with the plan and work with everyone who will work with him. That is his nature. That is who he is in his DNA. And I think it's one of the main reasons he was selected by the McCaskies, by the late Andy McKenna, by Pat Ryan to be the CEO of the Bears.
Yeah, I get all that, but I just don't quite understand how things have turned this way. In other words, they couldn't get the money that they needed, so they're back at Arlington Heights. Why the 4-year delay from the time they owned the building till then? And what was the point of the various meetings that they had, including the one at Soldier Field to announce this thing about a year ago? It just feels like that's all empty calories. I get it. They need the tax. They need to have certainty in what the tax is. But it just feels like that was a lot of time invested in stuff that has never come to fruition.
You know, you're right about that. If we look at it in retrospect, with Monday morning quarterbacking, we can look at it. It was a lot of time, wasted time. Or we can look at it as if this was the one shot to see if there could be something that could last for multiple generations on the lakefront in the city of Chicago. Look, I did not, we talked about this back when this occurred.
Right.
There were a lot of reasons why I knew that was going to go nowhere. First and foremost, the legalities. You know, we'd lived through the Lucas Museum where George Lucas and Melody Hobson were going to give a $1 billion gift to the city of Chicago, and it got roundly rejected because of the lakefront protection ordinance. So I did not think it was ever going to get through. I also knew how weak and feckless Brandon Johnson has been as mayor. So I knew he had very little juice in Springfield to get anything through as compared to, say, Rahm Emanuel or one of the dailies before him. And all anybody had to do was pay a little bit of attention to the financial condition the state of Illinois was in. So there just wasn't any money post-COVID because they spent so much money during COVID that just to get to any semblance of a balanced budget required, that was going to take financial engineering beyond anybody's prior imagination. So the money wasn't there either. So it was not something that was going to happen. But, you know, the old Daniel Burnham line, make no little plans for they have no fire to stir men's souls. Give it a shot. So I'm not going to criticize for taking the shot, but it did cost something. It cost time, but they took a shot. Give them credit for having taken the shot and recognize that it's recognized that it didn't work. Focus on Arlington Heights. They never lost their eye on that. And now work with the state to make that happen.
Great stuff, Mark. Thank you a ton. Really appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Mark.
Yeah.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Good morning, man. I was great until I heard that introduction, man. I don't know, who can I talk to about maybe getting that switched around with that little bachelorette summary there?
Consider it done, Clay. All right. Complaint registered. We'll take care of that next time.
What times? I actually saw a clock over. Time for
Clay Harbor.
Handle it with poise and class, befitting a veteran.
Football analyst for Chicago Sports Network. Former NFL player.
Not a quarterback. I'm a tight end, but I've watched a lot of tape. I've been in meeting rooms with Tom Brady. I've been in meeting rooms with Drew Brees. I've been in meeting rooms with Michael Vick. Quarterbacks know what they can do and what they can't do, and I know what a quarterback can and can't do and when you're supposed to expect them to be able to be successful.
Clay Harbor with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Time now to go out to my colleague at CHSN on the Big Pro Football Show every night at 5:30. We'll be there tonight talking Bears. He joins us now on the guest hotline, brought to you by Aturo Tire. Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Good morning, Clay. How are you?
Good morning. The accountability for you guys changing that intro after last time is the type of accountability that Ben Johnson is demanding. I mean, that's impressive stuff right there.
We do not want to get the Claymaker mad. We'd want to keep you on our good side, Clay. All right, so Let's go up to Halas Hall yesterday because you were there for mandatory minicamp. You watched all that you the practices, but you also heard Jaquan Brisker. We were talking before the break about what we heard and how uneasy it made some of us listening to him. What did you hear? You're coming up from it from the ex-player's perspective. From that perspective, Clay, how would you describe Jaquan Brisker's address yesterday?
It's tough, and you wish the best for him. And obviously, a player in his position, a guy that's given a lot to this game. You can tell he has a passion for football, and he wants to go out there and play. And in his situation, it's tough because he's a guy that's still got that first contract. As a player, if you're a guy of his caliber, right, Jaquan Brisker, you just saw Kyler Gordon get paid. You want that payday. You want to be able to change your family's trajectory for your entire life. You want to get that second contract. So I'm just hoping that he's not getting clouded by the fact that maybe he hasn't reached that second contract yet, that he really is ready to play. He looks good out there flying around, you know, with shorts and a T-shirt on. But my issue is, how's this guy going to respond if he gets another concussion? So for his sake, as a former player, I've seen this happen before. I've seen guys that have had concussions have to walk away from the game. And it's not easy. It's something that all of us really have to deal with, all football players, that isn't. It's something that's becoming more prevalent. You're starting to realize what happens post-football. So it's definitely something that he needs to contemplate and not just kind of sweep it under the rug and act like everything's okay. This is a serious thing, and at least you got to act like there is something worth changing or something you've considered here.
Yeah, you know, I hear exactly what you're saying, Clay, and I think what you're saying that resonates a lot. Now, the problem is when you've had 3 years that are interrupted by concussions, I don't know how much value people are going to put on you. In other words, I don't know how much that's going to impact your ability to get a big, far-reaching contract, just because you know how teams are. They're gonna look at the bottom line and the risk and all the rest of it. And I just hope that he's not looking for something that isn't available to him, and thinking that he can sacrifice his future for that. You know what I mean? Like I don't know how to put it in simple terms, but you know, there are teams that will think of a guy with multiple concussions as damaged goods to begin with.
Oh, Molly, I'll tell you that as sad as it is, back in the day, we wouldn't report concussions before the new CBA. Several times you have a concussion, teams would look at you like a pariah because you have concussions. It was something nobody wanted to touch. If you have a concussion, you keep it to yourself because you knew that you weren't going to get signed. You're going to get less in your next contract. You're going to be blacklisted because it was frowned upon so much, and they've done a lot about how they act about concussions, the research they've done towards concussions. And that's something that players used to try to hide. So that's something that comes out of it that's good. But to your point, that's exactly why it's tough for Brisker. Positionally, as a safety, you have to play a certain way. At a quarterback, people are saying, well, Tua's not supposed to get hit. If everything goes perfect for him, he's going to go the whole game and not get hit. Obviously, some hits will happen. Maybe you can change the way you fall. For a safety, it's so hard to change the way you play. These instinctive plays that just happen, bang, bang, down the hill, guy coming across the middle. You got to be able to hit him. Running back breaks through, beats your middle linebacker. You're the last guy in the defense. You think about, oh, let me make sure I hit with my shoulder. Or do you just go in instinctively how you've been taught, how you've been playing since fourth grade? What Jaquan Brisker said he's been playing since yesterday in his press conference. So those are the things that are going to be hard for Jaquan Brisker. I know what he's thinking. You want to get to that second contract. You want to really strike it big. You've played. You know you're a good player. But sometimes, all the time, in my opinion, your health is more important.
So, Clay, that's a human element. I think you describe it well, and everyone can relate to. I think from a football perspective, there's another factor to consider. The Bears aren't really well protected at that spot, and I think I'm a little surprised, knowing the uncertainty and relying on a guy that missed 12 games and has had three concussions in 3 years is a bit surprising. How surprised are you that they're not better covered at that position? And what could be left in terms of a potential options if there's anybody out there to provide some depth?
Oh, I'm very shocked. I'm actually very surprised. And this is one of the things I've talked about since day one. You have to proceed as if Brisker is not going to play this year. You can hope, but you can hope for something. And, you know, I forget how the old saying goes, but put hope in one hand and whatever in the other. I think you guys know what I'm saying, but we hope that Brisker is going to play, but he has shown that it takes one hit and now he's out for the season. So if this happens, Ryan Poles has no recourse. He has nothing to stop people from saying, how did you not see this coming? It was kind of like how Tevin Jenkins missed all those games last year. Nate Davis missed all those games. They've been missing games their whole career. You thought it was just going to finally change? There are still some solid guys out there that I think you really need to spin the tires on. Julian Blackman is a guy that I've watched, and this guy can cover. He can hit. He can play slot. He can play deep safety. He can play in the box. PFF had him graded as 19th in coverage at his position. He can do everything. Julian Blackman would be a great backup plan for Jaquan Brisker unless they do love Elijah Hicks, unless you think Jonathan Owens is a starting caliber safety. But you have to be prepared in case something happens to Brisker, because that is an important position, especially in this Dennis Allen defense.
Yeah, it's something to consider. And I still think they've got a couple positions that they can improve before they get to training camp. But I'm curious, what about Tyrique Stevenson? What did you think of his news conference yesterday? Do you buy this idea that they haven't talked to him at all? The new administration hasn't had any conversations with him about the Fal Mary, whatever you want to call it, and how that went down. And you know, honestly, like his reaction to that was not stellar either. In other words, when they deemed that he wasn't going to start the game, he walked out of practice over that. It's a totally different situation. It's not an injury related one, but there was an incident with him. It ruined their season. I don't think you harp on it. I think you try to move beyond it. He's still with the team. He's under contract. But I would have to imagine that even though it's a different group, he's also kind of on, I keep calling it double secret probation, and David says there's nothing secret about it.
I'm not shocked that they haven't talked to him about it, because Tyrique Stevenson has probably gotten enough from last year's team, from everything he's heard from the media, from the players. So they're trying to put this thing behind them, trying to build his confidence at this point. Let's put that behind you. The one thing I love from going from an old team to a new team is you get to reinvent yourself. You know, you get to show these guys how dependable you are, put the extra time in the film room, the extra time in the weight room. So that's what he should really be doing, trying to kind of repair whatever has been said about him, whatever has kind of been linked to him from the old staff. Okay, now your guy is dependable. You're not a hothead. You're going to get out there. You're going to cover these guys. And he's in a really good situation now, because I think this defense really caters to some things he can do. He's good at press man. He's a big, strong cornerback. He looks like a safety out there. He plays really well in the run game. That's something Dennis Allen really values. So I think he has an opportunity here to be a big-time player in this defense, and he's got to realize, he's got to be looking at the clock and thinking, if I play well this year, I'm up for a new contract. 2 years, I'm a free agent. So it's a big year for him. I think that he's got an opportunity in front of him, and I'm not surprised they haven't talked to him about it, because at this point, you're trying to build this guy's confidence.
Right.
He's done so much that's the main thing here. Make him confident, because he is a guy that can help you if he plays up to his ability this year.
Clay, we've got about a minute left, but I think I've heard some mixed reviews about what Caleb Williams was like yesterday at practice. I know you were impressed by some of the things that he did. What did you see?
I saw a guy that used his legs to escape for some crucial third down, on some crucial third downs. I saw a guy that made some plays that looked like an NFL caliber quarterback. He made plays downfield. He was checking the ball down. He did have an interception get dropped. He checked the ball down. You know, Ben Johnson yelled at him because it could have been a little bit sooner. But I was very impressed with what I saw from Caleb. He showed pocket presence. He was getting the ball out. He made some big plays. He ran a 94-yard scoring drive in 2 minutes. Obviously, no pads on, but he showed why he can be one of those top 10 quarterbacks. Use his legs, use his arms, use his check down. So he had a really good day, in my opinion, yesterday, and looked as good as I've seen him so far this year.
Clay, I was saying to David, you know, you mentioned that he got yelled at by the coach, and then he's asked at the podium, hey, you know, did he go to the wrong player? And he's like, he was late. You've got to be on time. I don't know why that stopped me, but that sort of transparency you don't usually get from NFL football coaches. To have the guy just casually tell you, no, he's late and he's got to be on time. And then he praises the kid. It's not like he's trying to embarrass him publicly, but this Ben Johnson, different cat altogether. That was pretty cool.
No, I love it. I love what I've seen from Ben Johnson out there. He's got, it's just the whole vibe of practice is a little more intense. The speed, this seems like a real NFL OTA, holding everybody accountable. You're late, he's going to tell you you're late. Yeah, it's a nice completion. Get it there quicker. All these plays matter. These inches matter. And Ben Johnson isn't taking anything lightly.
Great stuff. Clay, thank you. Always enjoy to talk to you. Appreciate it.
See you later.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys.
That is Clay Harbor. Does a great job.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.